September 17, 2010, the Norris Group returns with its award-winning event, I Survived Real Estate 2010. The Norris Group has assembled an incredible lineup of industry experts to discuss the state of REO from the inside, including regulatory intervention and aftermath, bulk buying myths and facts, and the opportunities emerging for eager real estate professionals. 100% of the proceeds support the Orange County affiliate of Susan G. Komen for the Cure. This event would not be possible without generous help from the following platinum partners: The Business Press, Foreclosure Radar, and Sean O'Toole, the San Diego Creative Real Estate Investors Association, and President Bill Tan, Investors Workshops and President Sean Watkins and Angel Bronskies, Invest Club for Women and Iris Veneration and Bobby Alexander, San Jose Real Estate Investors Association and Geraldine Berry, Claudia Buys Houses, Fry Wiles, the creative agency responsible for iSurvive2010.com, MVT Productions, who always provide our audiovisual needs, and White House Catering, who will provide the three-course meal for this black tie event. Visit iSurvive2010.com for details.
Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris. Today our special guest is Daniel Phelan. Daniel is the president and CEO of Pacific Southwest Realty Services. And he's charged with the day-to-day leadership of Pacific Southwest Realty Services mortgage operations. This company is an investment firm focused on commercial real estate, representing and advising both real estate clients and institutional investors in debt and equity placement, strategic planning, property sales, and loan administration. Daniel, welcome to our show.
Good to be with you.
I'm going to take us back to the boom years, first of all, because I think that might set up some of the situations that we're facing. So how would you describe the years 2006 and 7 in the commercial real estate industry?
Well, 2006 and 7 were probably the, and I don't know if you want to call it most productive, but clearly it's you know, both from a sale of real estate standpoint and a finance of real estate standpoint, which is what we were more heavily involved in. It was our two biggest years in our company's history. In each of those years, we did over $1.5 billion worth of commercial real estate finance.
So everybody connected to the industry was doing pretty well.
Yes.
Okay. I want to go back to the mindset of the commercial real estate buyer and their perception of risk that they were taking. What was your feeling about how they were viewing what they were doing?
Well, I don't perceive that most of the investors of commercial real estate perceived that there was undue risk in the prices that they were paying for real estate at that time. You have to remember that, you know, we really had a run up since the bottom of the previous cycle, which was in July of 1993, with the exception of you know, a little hiccup in 1998 and then again in 2002, you know, the commercial real estate, you know, just kind of had a continual growth pattern from 1993 all the way through 2007, which was really unprecedented. So, you know, you look at a lot of people who were involved in making those decisions about buying commercial real estate during that period of time, and they could have been in the business for, you know, 10 to 15 years and never saw a down cycle.
And that definitely affects how you perceive any risk at all, because if your recent history for quite some time is all positive, you're definitely probably making decisions maybe a little bit more lax than you might have. What about the lending side? How were they viewing the risk that they were taking?
Well, I think the lending side was looking at it similarly. It was a competitive situation, really, which we got to because, you know, Wall Street and securitized debt came into the market. You know, it came into the market in 1995, but it really didn't start really going until 2001, 2002, 2003 was the first really big year. So there was just a tremendous amount of debt capital available in the market. and it was extremely competitively priced, which was used by a lot of people to make their real estate investments that much more enticing. So there was just a tremendous amount of capital in the market. There were the rates and terms were very competitive. People saw the need to get their capital invested in some manner, shape, or form. And for those who were investing in commercial real estate, it was a good fit. It was a good alternative investment. It was deemed to be a safe investment because, again, they were looking at the same cycles that the buyers of real estate were. And with the, you know, maybe it was a hope, maybe it was more than that, that the commercial real estate would continue.
What were the down payments requirements, let's say, in 2006 or 7? Were they reduced just because of the confidence of the market?
Yes. Yeah. I think that you could get, I mean, we did several transactions, acquisition transactions, where we had borrowers that got into properties for as little down as 20%.
Okay. And that's a pretty small amount for commercial real estate. What would be the more typical down payment?
Well, historically, you know, you probably could have gotten most things financed with 25 to 30% down.
Okay.
You know, if it was a good multi-tenant property or a well-located property, industrial or retail, market drug anchored, you know, 75% historically has been a good number that we could achieve. Clearly, in the downtimes of the, you know, the mid '80s and the early '90s, and today, you know, that the loan-to-value ratios are substantially less than that mark. But historically, you know, 70-75% was very achievable.
It's very typical, at least in my limited experience, that most of the commercial loans are recourse. But during those years, did that change as well?
Actually, there are two tiers of debt out there. Most bank debt is recourse. Most non-bank debt is non-recourse. So, you know, the life insurance companies and pension funds and other portfolio investors that we were representing, you know, 99.9% of the debt that they put out ever has been non-recourse debt, where we could only look to the real estate for satisfaction of a debt if it went into default. And likewise, the banks historically have been recourse lenders. I will tell you that during 05, 06, 07, you know, we were able to get many banks to back off their recourse and or maybe even go non-recourse, but easily to 25% recourse for most banks during that period of time.
A lot of books have been written about the mortgage-backed securities and the CDOs and collateralized debt obligation, credit default swap, et cetera. Commercial world had kind of a similar setup. And I'm just curious, if I was buying something in 2006, what was the source of those funds? And did many of these loans not get portfolioed and they were, in fact, passed on to some eventual owner of the loan?
Yeah. The source of capital during that period of time and any time after about 1995, you either had your portfolio lenders, which were life insurance companies, banks, and the likes, or you had non-portfolio lenders, which would be the securitized and/or Wall Street lenders. In 2006, 2007, if you were trying to accomplish high loan per square or high loan to value and the lowest rate possible, more than likely you went to the CMBS or commercial mortgage-backed security market to get your loan. You might have expected a rate that was priced at 110 to 120 over treasuries, so very attractive interest rate, 30-year amortization, and those loans would have been pooled into billion or $2 billion pools and then sold off on Wall Street.
Okay. How have they fared as opposed to the residential? If they've also caused losses at this point?
Especially the late vintage mortgages, the 06, 07, have not fared well.
Okay.
Underwriting standards were very loose during that period of time, and the default rates in those issuances are well above 5% and in many cases above 10%.
Okay. Can you explain what mezzanine financing is?
Mezzanine financing is, you know, most people might look at it as a second trustee.
Right.
It's a debt that's placed behind a first trust deed. Typically, it's used to take cash out of a property. It's used to cover, you know, additional tenant improvements that maybe you have a new tenant coming in. Or maybe it was used to buy out existing partners to recapitalize the partnership.
Okay. Have the rates changed considerably since 06?
You know, mezzanine debt in 06 probably was available in the on the low end 7 to 8%, on the high end 9 to 10%.
Mm-hmm.
Much more likely in the 7 to 8% range, though, I would say, as generally speaking. The mezzanine debt today is probably above 10, and in some cases, 12 to 15.
Okay, well, that's not bad. Is it still available at the same LTV?
You know, it's not.
Okay.
It's not. You know, you might get mezzanine debt in 06 up to 90% loan-to-value.
Right.
Today, you might be lucky if you get mezzanine debt up to 65% loan-to-value.
Okay.
Or at all. I mean, it is much less available today.
Okay. If I'm a buyer of a commercial property today, who's going to fund the loan? And is there a big difference between if I'm going to occupy the building or if I'm going to, in fact, lease it out?
If you're going to occupy the building and it is a smaller building, and I would say something where the loan requirement was $5 million or less, and you were looking for 90% financing, you'd go with some kind of SBA and or bank kind of loan.
Mm-hmm.
You could get maximum financing that way. It's only available to owner user, and it's only available in a purchase situation, not in a refinance situation.
Okay.
If you were an investor and you were buying an investment property where it was multi-tenant, and you had, various tenants paying the rents and so on and so forth. You know, I up to the start of this year, I would have said that you probably would have most exclusively gone to life insurance companies.
Mm-hmm.
Since the start of this year, we've seen some of the banks come back into the market and some of them being willing to start doing some refinance and or purchase transactions where they're doing debt. Most of those of that debt that gets done by the banks, they're looking for a full relationship, bank accounts and operating accounts and so on and so forth. And just of late, since probably during the second quarter, the CMBS market, the securitization market, has started to come back in. We have funded our first two CMBS debt loans. Since the last one we funded, which was back in 2007, but it is not readily available today, and it's very sluggish, very cumbersome, much like when it first got started back in 1995, 96. But they are looking to try and get back into the market and to try, figure out how to lend in the market again.
The residential mortgage market went through the cycle of subprime and stated income, which really caused a problem. Is there some category of commercial loan that we're going to be seeing cause quite a bit of losses for the lenders? And what if that's true, what were the factors that'll be involved in that?
Well, the residential loans and the commercial loans clearly are underwritten and approved and funded on a much different basis. I don't know that we ever funded a loan on, quote, stated income, even though it's not a specific individual, but where someone just states, well, this is what I think the income of the property is. We still always looked at the operating history of a property, looked at the income of a property, how much it could support over time, and then what we thought was a reasonable expectation of how that income was going to continue over time.
By the way, how has that performed as far as a projection and the new reality?
Not very well.
Okay. A lot of difference. Well, it makes sense. It got a lot
I mean, you know, we were operating the, you know, when you think about, first of all, you know, in 2006, 2007, you know, we had not yet been hit very heavily with unemployment, although it was starting to come on. You know, most tenants were still, you know, most of the properties were still performing very well. Most of the occupancy rates in most of the markets were still way above 90%. And everything that you looked at in the past told you that, you know, this was a pretty good property and it was reasonable to assume that it's going to continue, and then the bottom fell out of the market.
Commercial is going to have a fair amount of resetting going on, and it's my understanding that that really accelerates in 2012. Is that correct?
Well, I mean, as far as loans that are coming due that got done CMBS-wise, yes, there's, you know, there are loans that are going to start coming due that were done in 2002.
I used the term reset from my, I guess, my residential history, but what you're saying is actually accurate. It's not a reset. It's coming due loan.
It's coming due because unlike a residential loan, which most loans, even if they're variable rate loans or term loans, they're actually 30-year loans. And in some manner, shape, or form, the rate could get reset or the value could get reset, but the loan could stay in place. Unlike that in commercial, the loan is actually due. So the loans that were made in 2002, they come due in 2012. And something has to be done.
Well, I mean, is that how much flexibility? You know, if the lender looks at the property and goes, okay, well, we really don't want that, do they have the flexibility of making a deal? Or is there some, I don't know, government oversight committee looking at that going, no, you can't do that?
Well, you know, the loans that come due in 2012, again, were underwritten in 2002.
Okay, there's only 10-year calls, not five or...
I mean, most of the loans that got done had 10-year calls. There are loans out there. There were a lot of loans as well that were done with 5 or 7 year maturities.
Okay.
But the bulk of the loans were done with 10-year calls. So if you look at the loans that are coming due in 2012, those would have been underwritten and made, generally speaking, in 2002. Underwriting standards weren't that out of whack back then.
And probably prices escalated a great deal after then, too.
Prices escalated a lot, have come down a lot, but are still greater than where the loans were placed in 2002. So, yes, there's loans coming due in 2002. I think there's plenty of capital out there to refinance those debt, and in many cases, the lenders are, especially the life insurance companies, are willing to roll those loans over if they're still performing and the like. Our bigger problem starts probably in 2014, 15, 16, and 17, when you have loans where clearly you may have a value that has diminished greater than when we placed the loan. You may have tenant issues or building issues or so on and so forth, much more so than the loans that come due, say, in 2012. So, you know, are we going to have some maturity default issues that we're going to have to deal with in 2011 and 12? Sure, but not where near to the extent that we're going to have to deal with in 14 through 17.
Okay. If I was in the construction business of commercial real estate, it looks like I might be on a vacation for a while.
Yes. I mean, the answer clearly is yes.
Okay.
Now, having said that, I will tell you that I don't know of any bank or any lender that we have talked to or represented that did a construction loan in 2008 or 2009. That is starting to break free a little bit now. We do have some banks now who are willing to maybe look at a multifamily property to do a construction loan on, where the market is very tight, much like the Southern California market, where you've got you know, we've always had barriers to building the product. And some other types, you know, some owner-user kind of properties or different things like that. So, you know, that is just starting to break free a little bit. So we're starting to see some available construction funds coming back into the market.
Okay. The residential side of the equation is starting to experience strategic defaults where somebody, you know, they could make the payment, but they feel like, well, I'm upside down by an awful lot. Why bother? Is that starting to occur in commercial?
I guess the answer is yes. I mean, you know, again, you've got different reasons why a residential loan defaults versus a commercial loan. The residential loan defaults because the person lost their job,
mm-hmm.
and they're not making any money anymore. The building that owns the person that owns the commercial building, you know, they've got 10 tenants in the building, and as long as 70% of those tenants are still making their rent payments, you can probably still make the mortgage payment.
Okay.
So as long as you've got a fair amount of occupancy in your building, and since the loan was based on the ability of that property to produce income, you probably can continue to make your payments. Now, where we're going to run into a problem is, as I mean, we've got a lot of and let's say office space. Let me pick on the office space specifically in Southern California.
Okay.
You've got a lot of tenants who had 3, 5, 7, 10-year leases where their business model may have, they may have let a lot of people go, they may have scaled back their business, and maybe they had 5,000 square feet, but they're only using 2,000 square feet, but they're contractually obligated to keep making the rent payment, and they will do so until that lease comes due. When that lease comes due, then they're either going to move out or restructure their lease or move into a smaller space or whatever it is. And so we have this overhang of income that will continue to come in as long as the leases are in place. But as soon as those leases roll, then those properties are going to start getting jammed down. And we're starting to see that happen now where you may have a building that has a physical occupancy of 50% but has an economic mm-hmm. Occupancy of 80 or 90%.
I see.
As those leases roll, then we're going to see the maturity defaults
so that's,
happen more and more.
That's the term I've heard, see-through buildings.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
right.
So you could have a fully leased see-through building.
Right. Yeah, you could.
Okay. Actually, that's better than one that nobody's paying on, so that's okay.
Yeah.
How have cap rates changed since the peak of the market?
From the peak of the market, you know, generally speaking, I think most cap rates in 2006, 2007 were probably in the low sevens and or sixes, with the exception of multifamily and apartments, and you probably saw most cap rates in the fives.
Okay.
I think in as of last year, most cap rates, with the exception of multifamily, had moved up to clearly they were in the 8 to 9 range. So, you know, fair amount of movement there.
Percentage wise, yeah.
Yeah, percentage wise, you know, because of Fannie and Freddie have continually been in the market financing multifamily debt, you didn't see near as much movement in the cap rates on multifamily.
Mm-hmm.
I think those cap rates went from, you know, let's say the mid fives to six range to the mid six to seven range.
Well, Daniel, we've got about a half a minute left. How do you see the remainder of 2010? Do you think this is going to be a market that begins to see more buyers and improve, or have more problems?
I think we're going to see more problems. I also think we're going to see a slow emergence of sales start to occur and people starting to get comfortable enough that they can, you know, buy some properties. Clearly, they can get financing today, although they're going to have to put 35% down instead of 25% down.
Okay.
And
you know what? We're out of time. Our guest has been Daniel Phelan. He is the CEO and president of Pacific Southwest Realty Services, and he'll be joining us on our panel in September for the Susan G. Komen event. Daniel, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.
The Norris Group would like to thank its gold sponsors for supporting I Survived Real Estate 2010. Adrenaline Athletic, Benton Investment Group, Community Reinvest Workshop, Del May Properties, Elite Auctions, Entrust California, Everlast Photography, Inland Empire Investors Forum, Keystone CPA, Landwood Title, Las Brisas Escrow, Lavis Financial Services, Mike Cantu, North San Diego Real Estate Investors Association, Northern California Real Estate Investors Association, Personal Real Estate Investor Magazine, Realty 411 Magazine, Rick and Leanne Rossiter, Summit Solutions, Tony Alvarez, the REOMentor.com, WealthPoint, and Weston South Coast Plaza. To find out more about I Survived Real Estate 2010, visit isurvived2010.com.